Here at Paddy Power, we're the home of the Money Back Special, with some incredible offers every single week. Check out the website or app today. Terms and conditions apply. 18+ begambleaware.org.
Hi there, football fans. Welcome along to the Racing Post Weekend Postcast. It's Bruce Millington, joined by Dan Childs and Liam Flynn from the Racing Post Football Desk and Paddy Power's wise owl, Jason Murphy, with all the odds, the stats and hopefully a first scorer tip or two. Really exciting stuff this week. We will look ahead to all the Premier League games and we'll get the lads' idea of the best bets in the Football League and right across Europe. Before we get into the games, though, lads, I just want to talk about the big talking point. Don't worry, we're not going to go on about this for ages, but it is so important and it's so dominant and it's actually affecting punting as well, is obviously VAR. But it's not so much VAR on its own. It's VAR plus the new absurd handball law. We saw it rob Man City of a winner. I guess that was great news for the bookmakers, wasn't it, Jason? But is it having any effect at all on how punters are approaching it, or are they just having to take it on the chin when it goes against them?
This is it. You have to take it as it falls. We decided to try and embrace it for this weekend, so we're going to get up a few specials on how many goals will be overturned by VAR for the coming weekend, so they're up on site now. For me, personally, the old system was not good enough, and the classic example for an Irish fan was Thierry Henry's handball.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. No one's ever mentioned that.
No. We don't like to talk about it, but I've never seen my father cry, but if he didn't cry that night, I mean, that robbed us of a World Cup. We've only ever gotten to 3 World Cups. You can't say you would have gone on to win the match, but it's such a massive decision that with technology there, we have to outrule those kind of decisions. You talk about Maradona's handball, and it's a great story, but all these years of hurt that English fans sing about, he could have gone on to win that World Cup only for that handball. So I think the technology has to stay, but as everyone has said, the handball law needs to be changed. I can understand their thinking behind that law, as in, if you look at the goal United got away at the PSG, that's why we don't want defenders being penalised for handballs. So I think it needs further tweaking, but I can live with the slight downside for avoidance of another incident that robs someone of a World Cup. Those are big moments. Those are life memories, those summer tournaments. The other thing that I found really interesting with the VAR is just how difficult the referees' jobs are. Like, it's, you know, they put up with dogs abuse for years when really it's completely unwarranted and unfair. And I don't think a linesman can ever be criticised again for getting any of those marginal calls wrong. If you take a leaf out of Ruby's book, the respect for the referee, that's what should be brought into soccer. And if I could change one rule, it would be any kind of aggression towards the ref should be a straight red card.
They don't help themselves, though, do they, Jason? Because the rule does exist, but they just never penalise them. I think the refs actually quite like to go down their little social club in the evening and say, oh, yeah, me and Rooney were having a right old go at each other. I don't know. They just don't help themselves because the rule does exist. It's just not applied.
But in a weekend, if, like I say, a couple of red cards and you wouldn't have anyone opening their mouth the following week. And what goes on at grassroots levels, you do see it when Mourinho was on top with Inter. Every team in Carlo was playing, you know, get the men behind the ball. Now every team is trying to play out from the back, trying to copy Guardiola. So for me, stuff like that, whatever you see on the TV is replicated. That's one rule change I would make. But for me, I'd keep the technology to try and get the bigger decisions right, and obviously rules need tweaking to get us to that.
How much did it help Paddy Power's profits that Man City didn't win that game?
Luckily enough, because the 3 p.m. power price clicked, and that was a big loser for us. Liverpool, Everton and Leeds and that, so the evening game was nice to get a little bit back.
Dan, what do you make of it? You're a Spurs fan, you were the beneficiary of it again, weren't you?
Yeah, but I think if VAR was imposed properly, then you could argue Man City would have won, because the penalty, that was where VAR could have come in, on the Lamella challenge in the first half, you know, which really, if it was used properly. And there was another incident over the weekend, thinking back to the Villa-Bournemouth game, there was a clear penalty, I thought, on King. You know, replay showed it absolutely clearly again.
That was what it was meant to be overturned. For, but everyone's fixating now on offside and ludicrous handballs.
As you've just mentioned, really, it's nothing to do with VAR. VAR is just implemented the new handball law, which is, I agree, is a complete nonsense.
It's the combination of the both, though, isn't it? Because if you just had the new handball law, no one would have noticed that. What you've got with VAR now is a way of finding ways to rule out goals. Yeah. And that's not what football's about.
No. But once you've got it, it is going to impose the laws of the game as they stand. And if those laws are wrong, then it's the laws that need to change, isn't it? As a spectator, I don't like it because you're taking your son to a game and you're thinking you can't can't even celebrate a goal properly. You look at like Wolves, the goal stood in the end, then a brilliant strike by Neves, and then everyone's waiting with bated breath to see if it's going to stand on.
That, for me, Liam, was the worst moment so far, and it was a brilliant quote from someone on Twitter. Did you see it? So basically, you're actually, if you're watching at home, you're actually seeing the lines appear on the screen, and someone said it's like my dad trying to work Microsoft Paint. It was like these ludicrous sort of rules suddenly appear, and then someone presses a button. I mean, are you a fan, or would you get rid?
Oh, well, I mean, firstly, I was at Stockley Park. I was one of the people who went along to that, and I got to see, I got to actually use VAR, and I sort of spoke with the video assistant referees, and they have a tremendously difficult job, so we can't rule that out. But the thing that was kind of emphasised more than anything else at Stockley Park was that VAR was only be used for correct, clear and obvious decisions. And more pressingly, the handball rules that are currently used by UEFA wouldn't be applied to the Premier League this season. The decision to rule out that Manchester City goal flies in the face of both of those statements that they put across. So
I don't know what they're doing. They're making up as they go along.
I don't know. Hang on a minute. I mean, you could see with the replays that it was pretty clear to me that it did hit his arm.
You can, brushed his arm.
It was a very minor brush.
But you could see it, though, couldn't you?
Only once you can disprove the law. Replay, but no one in the ground, none of the players, none of the fans care.
Once you're using that and you've used it and you can see the replay, you can't then say, well, we've seen it brush his arm and the laws say this, but we're not going to...
I agree with that, it was fine as it was. I actually think the tide is turning. I think fans are getting sick of it. More and more people now disagree with it, and I think it'll be gone by Christmas and certainly by the end of the year. And good riddance. Piss off. Right, that's that. Let's get on to the weekend. 8 o'clock on Friday night. Another Friday night game. It's Villa versus Everton. Sure to be a cracking atmosphere. One of the great things about having Villa back this year is that beautiful old Villa Park ground is nice and full. There were 40,000 on Saturday. And even though they've got off to a sticky start, the atmosphere will be great. But will Everton come along and kill the party? Jason, how do Paddy Power bet on this one?
Aston Villa 2-1, the draw 5-2, and Everton 5-4.
Dan, a very interesting game to start the weekend.
Yeah, I think Villa, the look of a team at the moment, to me, they're playing with a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of quality going forward, but maybe a little bit naive. You look at the Spurs game, some of the defending there, and you look at the Bournemouth game as well. They're giving up possession in bad areas in the middle of the park by trying to overplay, and they're getting punished. Could have conceded even more goals first off. I think that's going to be a big problem against Everton, who have got even more going forward, especially on the counter with Bernard, who did well against Watford, Richarlison's pace as well. I think this is they're going to punish Villa, who have got to work out a little bit more of a solid way of playing. To keep goals, keep them out at their own ends, because they've got plenty going forward. So Everton, for me, odds against is a good bet.
Flinny, where's your money going?
Yeah, I'd go exactly the same. Everton, I mean, I don't think they're the most exciting team to watch in the Premier League at the moment. Marco Silva's not the most charismatic of coaches, but, you know, they're yet to concede. They're very strong at the back. And Villa could have a tough time breaking them down. I think the interesting battle will be down the flanks. I'm really, really impressed with Luca Digne and Seamus Coleman. I think they're both excellent fullbacks for Everton. I just can't see El Ghazi and Trezeguet kind of causing too many problems for them. Villa, really, they had their chances in that game against Bournemouth. 22 shots in that match, but they just failed to capitalise. I don't think...
Most of them would be McGinn, though, wouldn't they? I mean,
he likes a crack at goal. But I think as well, one of the key issues is Tammy Abraham. Obviously, replacing him is going to be a long-term issue for them, and Wesley, I think he lacks a kind of pace and movement that Abraham brought their front line last season. Don't get me wrong, I think Villa have shown promise in the first two games, but a match against Everton, who are very settled at the back, difficult to break down and stubborn, would not be the ideal next match. So Everton for me.
Right, we've got two votes for Everton, but will we get three? Now, Jason, before I come to you, there's a guy on Twitter who I regularly correspond with. He's an Everton fan, and he hates you. Why does that Jason keep having a go at Everton? Why is he so down on us? It's not fair. So Jason, what are you going for here?
Yeah, let's be honest. At that price, I wouldn't back Everton at 5-4. I'd have to see them drift before I get involved at that for a couple of reasons. I think defensively, very solid at the back. I'd agree with Liam. Lucas Digne and Seamus Coleman, excellent fullbacks.
Coleman is what is a proper underrated Premier League footballer. I watched him at Palace the other week. He's just brilliant. He's so composed. He's so strong. Gets forward well. Love Seamus Coleman.
Obviously, being Irish, we fully appreciate him. And there was talks of him going to United a couple of years ago, which would have been great for us if it had worked out. And Lucas Digne, he set up Bernard with an unbelievable pass last week. And they have the second most clean sheets in the league. in 2019, they've 12 clean sheets, only Man City have more. So the issues are still going forward, and I still don't see those issues resolved in the first two games. Richarlison had a couple of chances against Watford, failed to finish them. They've only got four goals in their last nine games, if you include pre-season. Moise Keane came on, looked lively, got a couple of chances, but looked a bit greedy as well. He could have laid off those couple of chances he had too. Aston Villa, you know, to get Bournemouth a 2-0 head start last weekend. So number one message from them Friday night is keep it tight at the back, clean sheets, don't give up anything easy. So for me, Everton are still struggling to score goals, so I wouldn't be backing them at 5-4. I'd rather be on the unders, 2.5 goals at 11-10. And if you're looking for a goal scorer, you've kind of mentioned McGinn, 7 goals in the Championship last season, 3 outside the box. So have a look maybe in the outside the box markets, like you said, shoot on sight with him at the moment, or 6-1 anytime.
Lovely stuff. Right, then next up, it's the They've Played for Both Clubs fixture. It's Norwich versus Chelsea.
Right, 10 seconds to promote Paddy Power Games. Paddy Power Games, Paddy Power Games, Paddy Power Games. Advertising. It's easy when you know how. Paddy Power. Enough of the nonsense. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back. Let's look at Saturday's Premier League action, starting with the 12:30 game at Carrow Road. It's Norwich versus Chelsea. Before we get the betting and the tips, it's They Played for Both Clubs. What have we got, lads?
I don't know why... Chris Sutton, yeah.
Chris Dale, Sutton, yeah.
Dale Gordon played for Chelsea.
Dale Gordon.
I might be wrong there.
Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah. Did Loftus-Cheek play for Norwich?
I think he was on loan there at one point.
Robert Flack, going back. Robert Fleck, that's an ancient one, isn't it? So we've got Sutton, Fleck and Loftus-Cheek. There's got to be some more. If you remember, just blur them out. All right, yeah. Jason, give us the match betting from Paddy Power and then your idea of who's going to win.
Norwich 3-1, the draw 11-4, and Chelsea 4-5. Really impressed with Norwich's start to the season. Thought they were very good in Liverpool. Just defensively a bit sloppy in that first half. I thought Pookie, look, he was on fire last week against Newcastle. He was the difference, I think, between the teams. His first goal, an unbelievable finish.
The keeper should have done better, though, Jason, there.
He got a hand on it, I think, but sure, himself and the ball ended up in the back of the net. Like, it was just, no, it was a phenomenal strike take, nothing away from the goal. His second one, the way he came onto it and finished it, it was almost Kane-like from the edge of the box. And his third one, it was almost like a little cutback place finished on the third one. He's a man full of confidence. 29 goals in the Championship last season, and none of them were penalties. So, as an outright tip, there's still 33-1 available on him. If he continues, it is an if he continues in this kind of form, that 33-1 just looks crazy. And I think he could be back on penalties as well, because Vranić had taken over last season, but he hasn't started either game yet. So if they got a penalty, you'd have to give it to Pookie to take it. It's a big game for Chelsea. They play Norwich, obviously, and then Sheffield United next week. But then they're away to Wolves and at home to Liverpool. So Frank Lampard, he needs to put some points on the board in these next two games. And then Champions League is going to be back soon enough as well. Like, so, you know, the honeymoon period isn't going to last long, regardless of the goodwill, if he's not getting points on the board. Fairly impressed with Chelsea in the first half against United, first half against Leicester, but ran out of steam, so they did. So for me, all things considered, Norwich at home as well, at +1, 10-11, Norwich in the handicap, I think is a good bet. They're unbeaten at home in their last 11 as well.
That's 10-11, basically, to avoid defeat.
Yeah.
Okay, Dan, what's your view of this one?
I would echo a lot of that. I'm going to go with the draw. I think Norwich were very impressive against Newcastle. I mean, it was a very, very tough first fixture out against Liverpool, but Pookie was, I mean, I was not sure whether he would make the step up to the Premier League. I know it's early days, but you look at his technique for those goals and his movement, and I'm starting to think he's going to be a big, massive asset for them this season. On the Chelsea side, I mean, you can see already they're missing Hazard terribly. Tammy Abraham, I mean, he's having to, you know, fill the void there up front. I think he's struggling at the moment. I'm not sure he's up to the job of playing for a top six side. Lacks a technique. Never scored a goal yet outside the penalty box, which, you know, is a big stat in itself. I just think they're struggling. They played well for 20 minutes, I thought, against Leicester. As soon as Leicester stepped it up and kind of played without any inhibitions, they were the better side. And I think Chelsea are going to, they look a poor better odds on, so I'm going to go with a draw.
What are you going to go for, Liam?
So firstly, I think there's a lot to like about this Norwich team. Timu Pukki, obviously, he's a very likable character, isn't he? And down the flanks, Cantwell and Buendia.
Cantwell looks a player. He looks very tidy. Bit of a Jack Grealish about him. I like him.
No, absolutely. And their wing-backs as well. So a very likable team. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them get a result against Chelsea at all. But the bet I like the look of is Chelsea to be winning at half-time. I think the reason I say that is Norwich, I think, is as good as I think they've actually, they've given themselves a good account of themselves in the games against Liverpool and Newcastle, but they started quite slowly, whereas Chelsea, on the other hand, have actually looked very good in the early stages of the game, but kind of petered off as the match has gone on. Obviously, against Leicester, their goal came after the seventh minute, and they looked like they could have been 2 or 3 up, and then Leicester kind of took control of the game from there. Interestingly, a little stat here, Norwich actually placed 14th in the Championship first half table last season. They are winning only 13 of their 46 matches at the interval. And I think they're a team that kind of get better as the game goes on. I've certainly seen that in their first two matches. So I think, yeah, Chelsea to be winning at the break.
That's a very good case there, Liam. Well played. I love that stat. Right then, let's go through the four non-televised games that kick off at 3 o'clock on Saturday. First up is Brighton versus Southampton. Jason, give us the latest bet on that one.
Brighton 7-5, draw 21-10, Southampton 2-1.
We've yet to have a hot favourite. I think there's a load coming up, but this is another open game. Liam, what do you fancy?
I think it's a really difficult one to call, so I'd go with both teams to score in this. Southampton gave a good account of themselves against Liverpool. They had 14 shots in the game. I expect they'll revert to a front three this time around. They had two up top against Liverpool. And then you look at Brighton, I think they're obviously, compared to the days of Chris Hughton, I think Potter's going to make them a more front foot side. And with Mope, Trossard, Murray, Locardia, Andone, they have a lot of attacking talent. And they've, you know, they have allowed their opponents 19 shots across their first two matches. And I think that the back three that kind of setting up with could be a little bit susceptible. So I think, yeah, both teams to score.
Jason, I think you've taken a bit of a shine to to Brighton, haven't you?
Absolutely. Big fan of what they've shown so far. I know it's only 2-game sample, but the number of passes they've increased, they're actually 9th in the table for the most passes per 90 minutes, where they were 17th last season. What I read about Graham Potter and what he did at Swansea, very impressed. He actually played for Southampton. He got about 7 or 8 appearances, and he actually played 20 minutes in that Southampton game where they bet United 6-3. I thought it was interesting.
What, with the grey kit?
I think that was a different game, the grey kit. This one, Keane was sent off after about 16 minutes, and Eagle Austinstad was obviously, he had a good day, scored a hat-trick. But yeah, really sweet on Brighton. Liam has listed a lot of players there, but you've also Aaron Moy from Huddersfield, who's been on the bench. I think a big plus for them this season is Pascal Gross. He missed 13 games last season, about a third of it. And if you look at him, since they've been in the Premier League, he's scored 10 goals and 11 assists. That's 30% of Brighton's goals he's contributed. They've only scored 6-9 goals across the two seasons. So I'm really sweet on Brighton. I'm tipping up a Brighton win. Southampton were good against Liverpool, but you make your own luck, i.e. Danny Ings made the luck closing down Adrian, but he also, you know, he's got to finish that chance that he got. Again, you make your own luck. Che Adams has got to score that header in the first half. So all things considered, I think Brighton are going to have a very good season, and I'd definitely be backing them at 11-8.
Dan, have you got a strong view here?
Yeah, I'll go with Brighton as well. I think they look a lot more progressive, as has been mentioned this season. Trossard, I think, has made a big difference there, sort of playing between the lines. So he seems to really want to get his shots off as well. Got good technique, made a difference. I think Southampton look a little bit, they're a good football inside between the boxes, but they look a bit dodgy at the back to me. I mean, they play well at Burnley and then ship 3 goals, you know, in a short space of time against Liverpool. Liverpool had quite a few chances on the break to score more goals in that match. And I don't mean Liverpool are at their best as well. I think Brighton, you know, at the moment are just as good in midfield, but they're better defensively. You've still got that solid spine there. Duncan Duffy's still playing, so Brighton for me.
Okay, Jason, it's me for you next. Man United versus Palace. What's the betting here?
United 3-10, the draw 4-1, and Palace 8-1.
Come on, then, get it over with. How far will Man U win by, Jason?
Look, you can't take anything for granted with this United team. Looking at this match and their next couple, they played Southampton, Leicester and West Ham, and after the 4 results of those games, I think a decision can be made on Solskjaer. These are the games, if United are going to have a good season, that they should be winning, and against this Palace team should be winning comfortably. I watched about 70 minutes of Palace against Sheffield United last week, and I'm just like, where are the goals going to come from? Jordan Ayew, Max Meyer had the chances against Everton, didn't take them. Benteke can't really get a chance. He had one after about 6 minutes. Andros Townsend must be the most frustrated player in the Premier League. Everything seems to go down the left-hand side. And after about 38, 39 minutes, Townsend actually got a ball on the right-hand side. And Zaha is over on his side of the pitch and literally doesn't look for a pass, literally just takes the ball off him. Very frustrating for Townsend there as well.
Frustrated? I call him the most frustrating player. There's a reason we go down the left, my friend.
Yeah. I think Wan-Bissaka and whoever doubles up on Zaha with him, I think that'll stop Palace's limited goal threat. But I can't bank on United just yet. Maybe have a look at Martial 92. If United do get one or two, there's value in each way at 92, because if they get one, they'll get a couple, you'd imagine. But look, it's not Roy Hodgson's fault either. If he was to go, who are you bringing in? Like Sam Allardyce, Mark Hughes, you're not going to get an Allegri or a Mourinho. I think it's more to do with the squad than Roy's fault, really.
Don't even make it worse by mentioning Mark Hughes, Jason, right? I'm depressed enough as it is. Dan, is there any hope for Palace here?
I'm going to say yes. I don't know if I'm being off the wall here a little bit, but I look at Palace over the last 2-3 years outside the big six. I wouldn't think there's been any better away side in the Premier League. Now, since last season, they've lost a very, very good right back. They haven't lost anything else. Now, we're only 2 games in. They were awful. I backed them actually at Sheffield United. They were terrible. But it is only one game. I mean, as Hodgson said, I think after the game, it's about as bad as they've played since he's been there. Now, teams do often have a reaction to an awful performance. There's a kind of a nothing to lose game a little bit here at Man United. They're going to sit deep. They'll use Zaha on the break. Zaha, I mean, he doesn't have to go up against Bissaka. He can play anywhere across the line, you know, wherever he sees a weakness. Man United, losing Lukaku in games when teams are going to sit back, losing that bit of physicality, I think could hurt them. They're relying a lot on pace. I mean, you've got pace everywhere. Rashford, Martial, James. They've got great pace on the counter-attack. When you're looking to break teams down and you need crosses going in and a bit of physical strength, I'm not so sure about them at the moment. At the prices, I just think it's worth. I'd take a chance, Palace or draw a double chance.
Blimey. Liam?
Yeah, I think Palace could make it difficult for United, but I still go with the home seed. I'll go Man United to win an under 3.5 goals. You know, United have taken 4 points from two very tricky games against Chelsea, Wolves. The only goal they've conceded was a Ruben Neves screamer. They've looked far more organised at the back this season than last. Palace have been, you know, fairly okay at the back. It's the biggest problem is creating chances and going forwards. And I think they were quite complacent in possession against Sheffield United as well. So, and interestingly, they failed to score in their last 6 visits to Old Trafford. So I just don't see them scoring, and I think that United can grind out probably quite a narrow win. They're looking very good at the back with Maguire and Wan-Bissaka there.
Chef, mention one more thing as well. Last season's corresponding fixture, 0-0, shot count, Palace 1-11-9.
I was at that game, and I tell you what, if Man United ever produce a worse home performance without actually losing, I will be amazed. They were shocking. It was appalling, but I suspect that might not be the case on Saturday. Sheffield United take on Leicester at 3:00. Jason, how do Paddy Power bet on that one?
Sheffield United 12-5, the draw 21-10, and Leicester 6-5.
Dan, what do you like here?
I'm going to go with the draw here. I was as much as I was disappointed with Palace, I thought Sheffield United were very good in that game. They played with a hell of a lot of intensity. You know, they've been mentioned a lot, but the way they use the centre backs is going forward, the right side and the left side, it's quite hard to play against.
Just quickly explain what the tactic is there, because not everyone's going to know.
Yeah, they basically use a holding midfield player to cover at the back. Norwood sort of sits, and they and the right side and the left side is centre back. Basham is one, and O'Connell on the other side. They're given license to almost play like wing backs, if you like. When they go forward, they make the extra man and an overlap for them. So it's not easy to play against. Leicester, I think they're a bit inconsistent at the moment. 0-0 at home was okay first game. They started the game really slowly, I thought, at Chelsea. Then come into it, did well second half. I'm not sure how good Chelsea are, so it's difficult to judge that. I just think this is a tough game at the moment going to Sheffield United. Their tails are up, and I'm going to go for a draw.
Draw for Dan, who for Liam?
I'll go for Leicester. I think, yeah, Bramall Lane is going to be a tough place to go for teams this season, but I just think with Leicester, they've got, you know, the attacking quality in Maddison, Vardy, Perez, Tillyman to justify backing them at odds against. They had opportunities in Chelsea game 12, shots in total. They grew into that match, and only outside of the top six, only Palace had a better away record than Leicester last season. I think also one thing maybe Wolves could learn from them, in fact, is they're evolving from a counter-attacking team that we've seen in the last few years to a team that are more comfortable in possession, especially with Tillyman in that midfield now, and that could sort of play into their hands against a Sheffield United team who, compared to last season, now they're in the Premier League and naturally giving up more of the ball. So yeah, I'd like the look of Leicester to win this odds against.
Do you like the look of Leicester, Jason?
Not for this game. You know, it is a bit of a stuttering start, like Dan said. They should have bet Wolves from the point of view that Vardy had a great chance. 6-yard box, goes through his legs, doesn't register on XG, but it's a sitter that he's missed. And then I think they should have bet Chelsea based on the second half. You know, they created enough danger attacking moments to go and win it. So it could be sitting there with 6 points and things looking good. But I think Sheffield United, I think they're a good bet to stay up this season. And looking at the prices, I'd be sticking Sheffield United +1 in your ACCA. It's a bit short of a price, 8-13, but if you're looking to build an ACCA, couldn't argue against that.
And the other 3 o'clock game is Watford versus West Ham. Jason, what's the latest betting here?
Watford evens, draw 12-5, West Ham 12-5.
And we'll stick with you, Jason.
Yeah, you know, Watford could or should have had something on the board. You know, Pickford saved with his face there from Deeney last week, and, you know, Watford actually won the XG battle, albeit they conceded an early goal in that. I think Watford, I mentioned it before, like, in fairness, they kind of reached their peak last season, you know, the points total that they got getting to an FA Cup final. So they can't do much better, and maybe, you know, they were overperforming a little bit with that run last season. Maybe they're starting to regress a little bit. Yavi Gracia is actually under a bit of pressure now. I think he's third favourite in the next manager to be sacked. West Ham, look, ignore the City game. Everyone's going to take a hiding off City every now and then. They had a couple of injuries against Brighton. Anderson and Haller, big players that were missing. A bit of credit to Javier Hernandez. He came in again and scored last week. He actually scored 7 goals from them last season when, you know, Arnautovic was, you know, deciding where he was going to go or what he wanted to do. And out of those 7 goals, you know, they won all 5 games he scored in. So I think, you know, he's been a very good signing for them. All things considered, though, if you're looking for a bet in this game, I'd be backing the unders at 2.5. It's slightly odds against. Yes, West Ham won 4-1 there, but that was at the end of the last season when Watford had a cup final. But the previous 4 meetings between them have just 2 goals each, a couple of 2-0s and a 1-1 draw. So I'd be looking at the unders in a tight game. Both teams not looking to get bet.
Dan, I presume you're going to this. What sort of game will you see?
Yeah, I think it'll be an entertaining game. Watford, the game at Everton, they were awful at home to Brighton, just got picked off, really. But at Everton, they were back to last season's standard, really, without taking the chances. Played away to a team, one of the favourites to be best of the rest, if you like, and competed really well. Just didn't take the chances. West Ham, I thought, but Brighton, that's the first game where they're looking to get some points out. They got a point, but Brighton were a better side, really. And I think West Ham are going to have to improve. I think there's a few murmurs of discontent already there at the moment. I think the prices are about right. I would go for a first goal score bet. Deulofeu consistently gets overpriced for me in the first score markets. He plays through the middle alongside Deeney. He's Watford's main goal threat. Did great towards the end of last season. 7-1 first goal, Deulofeu.
Apparently, Deulofeu and Dean at Everton are half brothers. Did you know that?
No idea, no.
Someone told me that. I mean, it might be the biggest lie ever, and I've just made myself look an imbecile by saying it on a podcast, but apparently that is.
There is, yeah, facially similarity. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'd go against what Jason said. I think the prices reflect how difficult a game this is to call, so I'd be going for goals. Both teams scoring over 2.5 at about 10 to 11. Neither side has really done enough in their opening games to make me want to back them. But Watford, you know, they have had 19 shots across their first two matches, and it's only a matter of time, I think, before they score with Deulofeu and Deeney up top. While West Ham, they're going to be enhanced by, I think, the suggestions Felipe Anderson and Sebastian Haller will be returning to their team for this match. So with that in mind, I just think that it could be quite an expansive game. Both these teams are desperate for points, so backing goals could be the way to go.
I've got another half-brother question. Rajiv Van La Parra of Huddersfield is the half-brother of which Premier League footballer?
Is someone Dutch?
Wijnaldum.
Oh, okay.
How about that? 5:30, live on Sky, Liverpool versus Arsenal. What a cracker. This is going to be the two teams unbeaten at the top of the table. I suspect, though, that the market thinks Liverpool will remain unbeaten and Arsenal won't, Jason.
Yeah, Liverpool 1-2, the draw 10-3 and Arsenal 9-2.
Liam, what do you think of this? Do you think that 1-2 Liverpool is fair or a little bit disrespectful to the Gooners?
No, I think it's fair based on sort of recent history. Arsenal not particularly a great side to go away to these top six, just so defensively frail. I think the bet I'd look at would be Liverpool to win and both teams to score odds against. I think it's quite a simple one. It's copped in two of Arsenal's last three visits to Anfield. They're the only two teams with maximum points from their first two matches, but arguably they've both had quite straightforward assignment so far. I can see Emery starting Nicola Pepe this time around. I think that will sort of put the pressure on Liverpool's wing-backs, maybe restrict them a little bit more, and maybe alongside Aubameyang on the other flank, Lacazette through through the centre. And Ceballos, you know, he adds a different dimension to that midfield. He was better in his time at Betis, didn't get on so well during his time at Real Madrid, but really impressive against Burnley, worthy man of the match in that game. And something I think we've missed for quite a while since sort of really Santi Cazorla. I think he's that kind of player. And he just, as I said, adds a different dimension to that midfield. But the defensive frailties can't be ignored. They're not going to go away overnight. You know, lost the last three matches away to Liverpool, 5-1, 4-0, 3-1. It's going to take time to bed in David Luiz. I think he's a top signing at the back. And you've got to remember with Arsenal as well, they are still waiting on a return of who are arguably their first choice fullbacks in Bellerin and Kieran Tierney now. And the last seven meetings, interestingly, between these two clubs have featured 35 goals, averaging five per game. So I think we can expect an interesting one, an explosive one, which Liverpool will probably edge.
Jason, what did you make of Ceballos? Some game that, wasn't it?
Absolute quality. Seeing him in patches for Real Madrid last season, I think he scored a free kick, a winner away at the Betis as well, which is a sign of a young lad stepping up and scoring a late winner. Taking responsibility of the free kick is always a good sign, but absolute player and works hard as well. You know, he won the ball back for Aubameyang's goal too, so great loan signing there. Be interesting to see if he keeps it up, what happens come the summer. I think to simplify this one, obviously Liverpool attack and defence, it's championship winning. Arsenal have a championship winning attack, but I think they at best have a top 10 defence. If you split the difference, that's why Arsenal are a top 4 team, and I think it's the defence is obviously going to let them down again Saturday night. I think credit to Liverpool, you know, I think they've started the season very well. That second half of Man City was very good, got the job done against Norwich, won the Super Cup, okay, I'll be on penalties, and that was a difficult game against Southampton. Yes, possibly lucky to get out, but you know they got the 3 points regardless. As Liam has said, you know, there's been goals, plenty of goals in this fixture. Both teams to score has clicked in six of the last seven. That's only 1-2, but over 3.5 goals has clicked in six of the last seven as well. And that's 6-5. And I think whichever team scores first, you know, that's going to lead to an open game, as you know, whoever's got a goal behind is going to try and get one back, and it's going to leave either team open at the back. So an early goal in this game would be great as a spectacle. So I'd be going over 3.5 goals at 6-5. If you're looking at a goal score, there's plenty to choose from, but for me, I'd go for the bigger priced Lacazette or Bobby Firmino. Firmino has actually got 8 goals in 7 games against Arsenal. That's more than Salah or Mane have got. There's obviously maybe a bit of softness in that Arsenal centre back. As Liam says, I think David Luiz will fix that, and when the full backs, first choice full backs, are back, it'll be like a big difference. But at the moment, it's still only a top 10 defence Arsenal have. So I think Bobby Firmino 5-1 for score.
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about the fullbacks being missing. I'm doing a bit this Thursday just about the wealth of talent England has at right back, unusually. And I did a little Twitter poll just to see what people thought. I said, who's best out of Alexander-Arnold, Wan-Bissaka and Kyle Walker? And someone said, well, why haven't you got Maitland-Niles in there? I wouldn't have Maitland-Niles in a poll of Arsenal's best fullbacks. I think he's an absolute... I mean, he's a promising young footballer, but I don't have him anywhere near the best right-back.
Good against Newcastle, but yeah.
So there'll be plenty of people who'd be good against Newcastle this season, but that doesn't make him up with the others. Who's the best out of those three, Jason?
I think Trent Alexander-Arnold, I thought...
Here's the question. England are playing France in the final of the 2020 European Championship at Wembley. Who does he pick at right back?
Yeah, no, when you put Alexander Arnold has to European Cup experience. Kyle Walker, I think, has mistakes in him. Wan-Bissaka is still developing and he's going to be a quality player as well. But I think Trent over those two at the moment.
Who would you pick, Dan?
Yeah, Alexander Arnold. You look at how much he's improved in the last year or two. I mean, you know, you can only assume he's going to get better and better.
You go with that, Liam?
Yeah, full house, I'd say.
I just think defensively, he's still got a massive ricket in him. Anyway, Dan, what's going to happen Liverpool v Arsenal?
I think they're overpriced there, Arsenal. I'm going to go Arsenal drawn, I bet, at 7-2. I think it's a good time to play Liverpool. I watched their game at Southampton and they gave up 14 shots. I think Alan Shearer mentioned on Match of the Day, it was only one time last season they gave up that many shots in a match. They were good chances, a lot of them as well, where Che Adams missed a really good chance with a header. Danny Ings won near the end there. And Arsenal, if they get similar chances, they've got players, you know, real quality up front. Lacazette, Aubameyang, Pepe, as Liam's mentioned, could come in and play. Ceballos coming into the side. He not only offers quality, but a bit of bite as well. He was getting stuck in, making good challenges.
I don't have that Cazorla comparison. Yeah. I think he's got a lot more to
him.
Much more.
And he's got personalities. Well, when you go to these big games away from home, you need players with personality. Ceballos has got that. Luiz has got that as well. So you're starting to get through the team, and there's quite a few players there with a personality to perform in a big game. I think at 7-2, the way Liverpool are playing at the moment, 7-2 draw no bet is overpriced.
Let's do the Sunday and Monday games next.
Everything is better when it's bigger. Paddy Power's same game multi allows you to combine a number of selections from a single match into one big bet. Check out the same game multi tab and get building your bet. Terms and conditions apply. 18+ begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to the Racing Post Weekend Football Postcast. It's Bruce Millington, Dan Childs, Liam Flynn and Paddy Power's Jason Murphy. Let's look at the two live Premier League games on Sunday, starting at 2 o'clock at Dean Court. It's Bournemouth versus Man City. Jason, how do Paddy Power bet on this one?
We've Bournemouth 14-1, the draw 11-2, and Man City 1-6.
Last week on the show, Dan, after the prices were read out, I was like, God, aren't Man City a bit short here? Now, it was the luckiest ever prediction because, I mean, they really were superb, weren't they?
Yeah.
14-1 Bournemouth, does that, you know, you say everything has its price. Are you anywhere near that?
No. they're just such a gulf between City and the rest of the teams in the league. Now, what I would say is you can pick a weakness with City, and that's defensively. I mean, and that's what I'm going to base the bet on. Man City to win and both teams to score at 6-4. I think everyone's saying that VAR that's cost them the game against Spurs. Well, actually, two bits of bad defending cost them as well. You can see two games at goals at home. The defending for that Lamella goal, I mean, it was just so easy, wasn't it? Just a simple ball.
There can't ever have been a shot from that far out that's gone in the net so slowly, can it?
Yeah, slowly, not even in the corner. But even the time and space that they had to play the ball through to him, and he had all the time in the world, just take a touch, have a look. And the second goal, I mean, Lucas Moura out jumping them all from a corner. I mean, it's not good defending for both goals. And if you concede two goals, every chance you won't win a game. But look, here, I think they're going to have far too much, an even bigger gap in class between City and Bournemouth. They're just outscore them. So a City to win and both teams to score.
Liam Flynn.
I'll go Man City to win both halves. They won the corresponding fixture 1-0 last season, but I just think the frustration of that Tottenham result was going to get to them. They should never have drawn that game. Forget, you know, VAR handball rules aside, they won the shot count 33 in that match.
And they were absolutely brilliant, weren't they? It was a pleasure to watch that.
No, absolutely. And to be fair, they're like it most weeks. So I just think that they're going to have way too much for Bournemouth. Eddie Howe's men don't perform particularly well against the big guns. I mean, they won only two of their matches against top six opponents last season. And I think if they go behind early against the Manchester City team, scored 49 first half goals last season. And I think they could go behind early, and then, you know, Man City are ruthless. They won't.
What price is that to win both halves?
13-10, I believe.
13-10 odds against. That sounds good. Jason, what do you reckon will happen?
Absolutely echo everything the boys say. Man City, like, look what they did to the third best team in the league last Saturday. Tottenham, you know, were in the European Cup final only a couple of months ago. Man City are going to win the league. They can only stop themselves really either through some kind of tiffs like that Aguero Guardiola thing. I didn't like seeing that. And obviously Guardiola's management style, there is a theory out there that, you know, it could cause a lot of frustration among the players as the season progressed. So you wouldn't like to see anything like that developing, or injuries. Sané is already out. If they picked up one or two, maybe, and then just like I said, a couple of bad calls go against them. But all things being equal, they're going to win the league. Bournemouth, 5-4-1, the setup here last season. No interest in trying to score. They didn't have a single shot in the game. So I think Man City will just dominate start to finish. So try and find a bit of value in the goal scorer markets. Mahrez 13-2, first goal scorer each way, is the best scored the winner in this game last season. Iker Gundogan, he's 14-1 each way with one bookmaker. He got six goals last season, had a couple of block shots against Tottenham. So like I say, he might do a bit of defensive work, not as much with Rodri there obviously, but if Man City are going to be dominating the game, they're only going forward, he's going to kick on and possibly gotten the end of a ball here or there. So I'd have a look in the goal scorer markets when team news comes out.
So we're back in Mahrez and Gundogan, yeah?
Have a look, yeah, team news dependent, yeah.
Lovely stuff. 4:30, Spurs versus Newcastle at the New Lane. Jason, what's the latest on this?
Tottenham 1-5, the draw 5-1, and Newcastle 12-1.
Liam, could you back Tottenham at 1-5 here?
Not 1-5, but I'll go Tottenham double result in this one. I mean, Tottenham, to be fair, they haven't started either of their first two matches particularly well, but I think they can buck that trend against a Newcastle team who, I mean, I was just shocked in the first game against Arsenal, the lack of impetus when they went behind. There was just absolutely nothing. I mean, Saint-Maximin kind of showed a brief glimpse of something good, but beyond that, they're just so poor. Joel Linton, I don't think, is going to have a particularly good season for them either. And yeah, I just think if Spurs put that wealth of attacking quality they've got at their disposal, even sort of second string against Newcastle, if they put that to good use early on, I couldn't see Newcastle coming back. There's just a very defeatist attitude, toxic atmosphere on Tyneside, really. And they've also fired blanks in three of their last four meetings with Tottenham. So I think, yeah, Tottenham double result.
Jason, can you give the Beleague and Magpies any hope here?
No, and their injury list isn't helping either. There's doubts over Saint-Maximin. Like you say, he was the one bright spark when they went behind against Arsenal. Joel Linton is a doubt as well. Dwight Gayle is still not back. Andy Carroll isn't fit. So it could be Muto starting up top. I remember him scoring against United, I think, but that's about it since he came in from Mines. So Spurs, yeah, they're not probably fully up and running yet. Son will be back. I don't think he starts, though. I think they just, you know, get him up to speed slowly. So if you're looking for a bet, I think that is a bit short. But if Spurs do win the game, they're probably going to win it to nil. They've beaten Newcastle in the last four games, and three of them have been to nil. So I could get on board. Spurs to nil at 10 to 11 is okay.
Dan, are you joining in the general vibe here?
Not totally. I think Spurs will win. I just think I see a bit of vulnerability at the back with Spurs at the moment. So I'm going to go Spurs and both teams to score at a big price, 9-5. I get what people are saying about Newcastle's sort of lack of attacking power at the moment. I mean, Joel Linton, he looks like he's got a bit of pace and about him and strength, but he's still learning the game. Missed a good chance, and the header against Norwich. Almiron needs to play better. They need to play closer together as well. At the moment, there's just too much of a gap between the two of them. Shelvey offers a goal for it, as he showed when he took his chance well at Norwich. I just think it's based more on Spurs defensively. No Jan Vertonghen at the moment. There's something going on between him and the manager. They're weaker without Jan Vertonghen at centre-back. Sanchez makes errors now and again. The right-back is a weakness area as well with Kyle Walker-Peters. He's still learning the game there. And there's not a lot of protection there. And Ndombele just wants to go forward. You saw that against Man City at times when they were breaking off. I know it's Man City, but if you're not doing your jobs defensively, you're going to leave gaps. So I just think there's a chance Newcastle might nick a goal. Spurs and both teams to score.
We've got a 4:30 non-televised game, Wolves versus Burnley. This probably would have been a championship game halfway through the 20th century. But as it is now, Wolves very much the dominant force. What's the latest betting, Jason?
Wolves 4-5, the draw 23-10, and Burnley 7-2.
I tell you what, good luck to you guys trying to work this one out, because this isn't Wolves' sort of game, because they're counter-attackers and they don't necessarily take the team. And I've given up trying to guess what Burnley are going to do. So you guys go for it. Dan, start off.
This is my strongest fancy, value-wise of the weekend. I'm going to go Burnley or draw double chance here. I just think that it's a tough... Wolves are playing Monday against Man United, high-intensity game. Then they've got about the toughest draw you could have at this stage of the Europa League, playing Torino on a Thursday. And you've got to play on Sunday against the Burnley team that I weren't expecting them to do a lot this season, but you have to say, 3-0 at home to Southampton. Again, they're doing the right things in the penalty boxes. Against Arsenal, they actually won the shot count. They really did, give Arsenal a lot of problems. Ashley Barnes, he's getting better all the time, isn't he? Great, another good finish. There's a threat there. Wolves, I just don't think are going to be, they might make a few changes. If they don't, I think they'll be a bit leggy. So I think Burnley not to lose the game is a really good bet.
Okay, Liam, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd echo everything Dan just said. I think he must have had a look at my notes, because literally everything exactly the same. I mean, Burnley, I think they've eradicated the reputation for sitting back now. They're more positive on the front foot, especially with Ashley Barnes going forward. So put three past Southampton, as Dan said, won the shot count again against Arsenal. And yeah, literally what has been said, Wolves don't like to have a lot of the ball. They like to counter-attack. I think Burnley might allow them a bit more of the ball. And a small squad is going to be tested by that trip to Torino on Thursday.
Jason, do you share the lads' scepticism for the Favs here?
Yeah, I'd absolutely echo Liam, echoing Dan there. That's what I've down in my notes here as well.
It is a problem, this, isn't it, Jason? Because although everyone really respects what Wolves have done, we've seen so far that they're not a team that has this, desire to swarm all over teams, are they? They're just not built, or they're not they're either not built or not set out to or told to take the game to teams. This could be a problem here, couldn't it?
Yeah, this is it exactly. And in terms of ratings, like if you were to give Wolves a proper rating as, you know, seventh best team in the league and assign a goal to that, what you would find is if you apply that rating when they're playing against the top six teams, you'll see the market price will shorten. But if you use the same rating as you would for them playing Burnley, you will see them drift against teams outside the top six, purely for the reasons you've outlined, that their biggest strength is counter-attacking when teams come onto them and hitting them on the break. Whereas when they have to go out and break down teams, we have seen them struggle to do that. Huddersfield bet them twice last year. And, you know, the tables are reversed. Burnley had their Europa League hangover when they went to play this game last September, and Wolves battered them 1-0, so to speak. But like on XG, it was like 3.3 to 0.2. So Wolves will have to, you know, deal with that Europa League, which is what they want, is what the fans want. You know, they want to get through that Torino match and qualify. But this is what comes with success. And absolutely, I'd be very much in favour of evens, Burnley in the draw there, and double chance. And I don't normally tip up correct scores, but I think 0-0 at 7-1, I think, is a value play here as well.
What do we always say about 0-0 though, Jason? We back no goal scorer, don't we?
Oh yeah, that's it.
Because it does happen once every 2 or 3 years. You've backed 0-0. The only goal is an own goal, and you've done it wrong, and you kick yourself. There's nothing worse. So no goal scorer. Okay, interesting stuff. Thanks to everyone who said that they really appreciate the fact that we've put the Football League and the European tips back into the postcast. So take it away, lads. Don't give your naps away, but what else away from the Premier League do you fancy?
Right, in Europe, I'll go for Atalanta away to Spal. It's the first weekend of the Italian season. Third last season, Atalanta got a lot of excitement there. Champions League football to look forward to. Kept their best players away from home last season. Won 10 games away, same as they won at home. So a very strong away side. Spal only finished 4 points above the relegation zone. Haven't done enough to strengthen. So Atalanta at 8-11. EFL tips. Peterborough, they've been playing well but not getting the results, but they got the result at Southend, 1-2-0 on Tuesday. They're playing away to MK Dons at 9-5. I think that's a good bet. And Burton, who have won all three away games, one of them in the EFL Cup this season, I think they'll win away again at Shrewsbury at 13-8. Shrewsbury, they come from behind, beat Accrington 3-2 on Tuesday, but didn't play that well.
What you got for us, Liam?
Starting in the EFL, Millwall draw double chance against Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough were very, very poor in the first half against Wigan. They went on to win 1-0, but beyond Britt Sombalonga's goal, they didn't really create anything. Millwall have had a tough start, but they've coped pretty well. They beat Preston and Sheffield Wednesday and drew with West Brom. And then in Europe, I think Dortmund to win and both teams to score against Cologne. It copped in their opener against Augsburg, which they won 5-1. New defensive partnership in that game of Manuel Akanji and Mats Hummels was breached in the first minute, which was a little bit
concerning. I backed that on your say, so it was good to get the away goal in, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, early on, yeah, exactly. But obviously they went on with Sancho, Brandt, Royce, Alcacer all getting on the score sheet, 5-1. And Cologne, I think they're going to have an okay season. They lost their opener against Wolfsburg, but they did get on the score sheet. And then the other one, as Dan says, start of Serie A, I think under 2.5 goals in Fiorentina versus Napoli, the big game of the weekend, really. The two meetings between these sides last season featured only one goal. It's a 1-0 and a goalless draw. And Napoli have reinforced their defence this summer with the addition of Kostas Manolas from Roma. I think with the first match of the season, we can expect quite a cagey affair in that one.
What have you got for us, Jace the Ace?
Not in the lower leagues, and I'll get up to speed today, obviously, with matches on midweek on that. Give you a couple in Spain if you're having a look. I think Barcelona at home to Betis. It's televised ITV4, so if you're sitting down watching the Sunday night, Barcelona, Suarez, Dembele are both missing. They weren't great against Bilbao. They didn't create a whole lot. Rakitic started on the bench and they were better when he came on. And Messi isn't fully fit either. They might have to start him in this game. But Real Betis, you might look at it and think they lost 2-1 to Valladolid last week, but they had the keeper sent off after 10 minutes. They should have won that game. And like I said, Barcelona not fully up to speed. So have a look with opposing Barcelona if you're sitting at home Sunday night. It'd be a great game to watch. He's also, obviously, Atletico Bilbao to bet Barcelona last week. I think there's a slight overreaction to that as well at the same time. So Getafe are still as strong as what they were last season. You know, they made a run for top four. They're 7-4 there at the moment at home against Bilbao. I'd have a look at that as well.
Lovely stuff. It's great to have football back on ITV4, isn't it? The Spanish stuff. That really is good news. Let's get the naps.
This will not be beaten.
This will not be beaten. I doubt I'll have a stronger Premier League fancy all season than Leicester at odds against Sheffield United. Sheffield United did well to win against Palace last week, but we were absolutely awful. I thought Leicester were electrifying at times late on against Chelsea. I think they're going to be top four this season, definitely top six. I think they're going to win this one easily. Cannot believe their odds against. Dan?
I'm going to go, Burton to win away at Shrewsbury. Burton won 4-2 at Oxford on Tuesday, which was a fantastic performance. I think Oxford are going to be up there, so shows you how well they're playing.
Liam?
Wickham to beat Southend. Wickham take a maximum points from the first two home matches, and Southend would be bottom of the table if it were not for Bury and Bolton's financial troubles, so I think that looks like a solid bet.
And Jason?
The pressure is on because the NAPTA and the special did click last week.
And didn't it? You enhanced that from debut. 13-2 to 8-1. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it was a very good price because all three of them kind of shortened a bit as well. But so the pressure is on to follow Johnny from last week, and I'm going with Sevilla. It actually, you don't want to get on early. It's 7 o'clock Friday night. Sevilla is 10-11. Look, they've had a huge overhaul since last season. Lopetegui, who was at Real Madrid last season, remember, had to leave the Spanish job coming into the World Cup. I think he's a fantastic manager. And they've brought back sporting director Moncay, who's, like I said, a huge overhaul in the club. They've got in a rake of transfers. They had 6 or 7 debuts last week, and all great signings. Campos from Marseille, De Jong from PSV, 28 goals in 34 games, Olivier Torres from Porto, Joan Jordan, who was the best player for Eibar last season, a very good season, Reguilón, who kept Marcelo out of Real Madrid last team at full back last season. So Sevilla at 10-11, they had a very good win 2-0 last week. I just think that 10-11 won't be there. They're away to Granada, who just came up. They drew 4-4 with Villarreal. They were losing 4-2, and Villarreal had the same problems as last season. They just cannot defend or hold on to a lead, hence why Granada got a 4-4 result last week. But that Sevilla 10-11, I don't think it'll be there come Friday night. And like I say, if you're getting on the special, which we'll have up on site, just get on early before Friday night.
Thank you very much, Jason. So that's Leicester, Burton, Wickham and Seville. Paddy Power, if you go to paddypower.com, they will enhance that. It's under Soccer Specials, the Postcast Acca, and you need to have it on before Friday because Seville are playing then. Thank you very much indeed, chaps. Fantastic stuff. Hope you all have a good weekend. Hope all your bets go as well. Thank you very much indeed for tuning in. We're back next Thursday for another Racing Post football postcast.
Friends, or maybe more, earn a 20 quid free bet for every friend you refer to Paddy Power, thanks to our Friends with Benefits programme. Log in to your Paddy Power account and share your referral link to get started. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.